Heartbreak Hotel. Wow. Florida State advancing to Omaha in the College World Series while LSU's season comes abruptly to an end. Easy to dissect, easy to second guess. We'll go through it all. Kevin Durant says he's playing. What kind of an impact will he have in this enormous Game 5 if you're a fan of the Dubs? And it's the biggest game in franchise history for we, the North. These stories and more coming your way today, Monday, June 10th, 2019.
Kyle Lowry out near center court, the logo there at center, just over the logo now, still straight away, waits as Kawhi Leonard comes back to get the ball. Kawhi guarded by Thompson, dribble drive on the near side, into the near corner, Danny Green, three ball, busted, east side three, it's his first bucket of the game.
Now the pitch to Rendon, belted to the air to deep right, back goes Reyes, way back, going, going!
And Muncy hammers one to right field. This ball headed over the landing and into McCovey Cove for a home run. Max Muncy with his 13th home run of the season. It is 1-0 Dodgers.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome. What you didn't hear from the announcer was Madison Bumgarner yelling at Muncy, run! Run! Don't watch the ball. Run! Madison Bumgarner, just crazy. Crazy! And I saw a stat where there have been far more perfect games thrown in Major League Baseball than teams hitting back-to-back-to-back-to-back four straight home runs. So quite a day for the Nats yesterday. Welcome. Great to be with you. The day after the LSU baseball season came to a crashing halt. Congratulations to the Florida State Seminoles and to Mike Martin, who was very gracious throughout his time in Baton Rouge. If LSU can't win the whole darn thing, I'm pulling for Mike Martin and Florida State. Good ball club, really good coach. That's another season, like 40 straight years of 40 wins or more. It's ridiculous how consistently good they are. But we welcome you. This is the Jordy Helpert Show. The man that runs it is in the 237 Ruth Studios at the Master Control Suite. My main man, Clint Domain, producer extraordinaire. Thanks for all of you for being here. I'm your humble host, Jordy Helpert. And it was funny. I took my daughter to both of the games at the box. First game, we sat next to Ed Orgeron's wife. Not a nicer lady in the world. As sweet as could be. And it was very funny. After Saul Garza missed second base and was declared out, he comes jogging back to the dugout, and you can't see. I'm sure Palminteri said something to him, but you couldn't see it. So I made the comment, I wonder if there's a football coach that might have said something. She goes, oh, man. Oh, my goodness. And she said, can't wait. You're going to love what you see out of the LSU Tigers on the football field this year. The next game, I'm sitting next to Alan Dunn's wife and Nolan Kane's wife. And to see the anxiety and the angst and the pressure and the stress that these coaches' wives go through, it's they don't mind the paycheck that comes every 2 weeks, I can promise you that. But, boy, they live and die with every pitch. So congrats to Florida State. But look, LSU had their chances. They ran themselves out of innings with some blunders on the base paths. They forgot how to catch the ball behind the plate sometimes. But they fought. They battled. They hung in there. They did what they could do. Florida State's a better team. And if you look at Florida State, I know this doesn't really matter, but LSU's got a bunch of guys that are 5'8", 5'9", 5'10". Florida State got a bunch of guys, 6'3", 6'5", 6'2", and they got some boppers. And they got some really good pitchers. They won. And they did it in the most hostile environment you could ever imagine. The box was rocking on two nights. Congratulations to the LSU baseball fans, the best in the business. Over 11,000 strong, not a seat in the house. Not a seat available in the house. Florida State brought their group. They were very loud. They were fun. It was well played between the lines. A lot of respect for both clubs. We will talk with a man that was in the booth, who's part of a national championship team. Buzzy Haydel will join us in this hour at about 2:15 on the clock. It's game 5 of the NBA Finals, and the Toronto Raptors, it's the biggest game in their franchise history. They've been around for 24 years. They have a chance to get it done if they can get it done tonight. Steve Kerr, the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, down 3-1. Quite obviously, everybody, including Kevin Durant, available, all hands on deck.
Whatever is happening on the floor, if it's going well, we stay with that. If it's not, we make quick decisions and we move forward. And we might, rotate guys in and out quickly. We might get them 30 seconds rest here, if that's what it takes. But, all hands on deck, and we got everybody ready to go physically, mentally, whatever it takes to win the game, that's what we'll do.
His counterpart, Nick Nurse, you saw how the team has kind of taken on the Kawhi Leonard approach of things. No laughing, no high-fiving. They just walked off the court after winning 2 straight at Oracle Arena. And Nick Nurse talked about the somberness of his team.
Right. I think, again, our collective IQ, our experience, and our demeanor has been good after these games. We'll see tomorrow, but so far they've gone in after games and talked about continuing to work and improve.
Kevin Durant will play in the game tonight. As far as his effectiveness is concerned, who knows? Garrett Temple will join us at the bottom of this hour. He's guarded Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard's guarded him. He's guarded Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's guarded him. We'll get his expertise on Game 5 of the NBA playoffs tonight. Then we'll visit with Doug Ireland in hour number 2. He is the longtime sports information director at Northwestern State in the lovely city of Natchitoches, which just so happens to house the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. They had an induction ceremony over the weekend. We'll talk about Les Miles, Peyton Manning, and others. It's all coming your way. We'll take our first break of the day. When we come back, the box, Buzzy Haydel, Tigers. Ugh, tough way to go. Self-inflicted wounds. Next.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Hey, welcome back. What a heartbreaker it was at Alec Box Stadium, Skip Bertman Field. Congratulations to the Florida State Seminoles. The sports calendar year has come officially to a close. Buzzy Haydel was in the booth calling the game along with Chris Blair of the 5-4 extra inning win by the Florida State Seminoles, and Mike Martin goes to yet another College World Series. Buzzy, kind enough to join us. Good afternoon, my friend. How are you feeling today, the day after?
Feeling okay as far as, getting enough sleep. I'm just glad that game didn't start at about 7 or 7:30 like it would have started today. It might have even been 8 o'clock tonight if it would have been a game 3, because it would have went well into the 12 o'clock, maybe even the next day. But so we started at 5. I was able to get out of there at a decent time, but feeling okay, rejuvenated. Obviously, a tough loss for the Tigers, but Jordy, it was really an incredible game from start to finish. Just didn't finish the way the way Tiger fans would have hoped.
Buzzy, I'm sitting next to Alan Dunn's wife and Nolan Kane's wife. I got my daughter with me, and I saw the angst every time there would be a pitch. They couldn't watch. It was just the drama and the intensity and the nerve. It's just, I feel for those people. They can do nothing. They want their husbands to succeed, but my goodness gracious. Of course, you played on the last national championship team that LSU ever had, and I'm just curious as to your viewpoint, because you had two shutout innings in the 2009 SEC Tournament Championship game versus Vanderbilt that helped clinch the tournament title. I got to believe your appreciation of what Devin Fontenot did last night is off the charts.
Well, and why you appreciate it so much is because, the two innings I threw in the SEC Tournament, we were up like 6-2, so we had a four-run lead. You know, pressure's still there, but you got a little leeway, you know. And you're talking about Devin Fontenot going 6 1/3 inning, you know, 11 strikeouts, just incredible performance. And, oh, by the way, I mean, the first run that crosses the plate, you know, you're going to lose the ball game. He did everything you can ask from a pitcher, from a coaching standpoint. He gave his team a chance. And what was tough watching it, though, is that every time he didn't, you know, LSU failed to score a run from about the ninth inning on, he just felt like, okay, every time we give Florida State another chance, we're not the home team in our own ballpark. That doesn't happen ever throughout the season. I mean, you just felt like the ending was almost inevitable when you know, LSU started struggling so much at the plate and couldn't get the big hit. But, no, I mean, Devin Fontenot, that young man there, I mean, you saw all the reports with Mike Martin wanting to meet him after the game and just congratulate him and talk about how much of a warrior he was. You know, just unfortunately throughout the year, they didn't get performances like that on a consistent basis. And I think when you look back at the season, that kind of really – and look, there was a lot of injuries involved in that, Jordy. There's a big – you know, that's not an excuse. That's really just an explanation of LSU wasn't the team that a lot of people thought they would be at the beginning of the season. Injuries plagued them. And then they didn't quite – you know, I wouldn't call them the most clutch hitting team in the history of LSU baseball. They had some times where they just didn't get the big hit. Where you look at seasons before, I mean, look, how much different would the 2000 team have been if, you know, Brad Cressy wouldn't have got the clutch hit in the end, or Ray Wright wouldn't have made the clutch catch over the fence? Or in 2009, if DJ LeMahieu doesn't hit the double down the line when we're losing by a couple runs in the ninth inning, you know, I mean, it just all comes down to who gets the big hit. And you got to have some pitching, and they just didn't. It seemed like they didn't have enough arms throughout the course of the year, and it kind of caught up with them this weekend. Although, again, Fontenot was incredible.
Yeah, Buzzy Haydel, kind enough to join us. Let's talk about the two big elephants in the room. Number one, a lot of people saying first base is open. Drew Mendoza's up. Why pitch to him at all? Put him on. Yep. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, look, and it's always
easy. Look, let me interrupt, Buzzy. Look, hindsight's a great thing. We can sit here after the fact and talk about everything. But you're a baseball guy. You know the percentages. Right. You know, so take me through it.
Yeah, no, and look, you can always hindsight 20. You can always look back on everything, but that's why we got radio shows, right? Jordan, this is what makes it fun. You can go back and you can dissect things. And look, if you were listening to the radio broadcast last night, I know a lot of people watch it on TV, but if you caught the radio broadcast, I said that in a way. And look, I trust Coach Mineri. He's been around the game forever, almost as long as Mike Martin and the coaching experience. Of course, has the national championship. You can look at his resume, right? Coach has done it all, and he's been there, and he knows. But I said, you know, with a base open, would not be surprised if they just give the intention to walk to Mendoza to face the freshman Martin on deck. They did not do that, and, you know, there's a lot of different points to it. So I said that even before it happened, and then, of course, he gets the hit, and then it blows up, right? They should have walked him. They should have walked him. You know, and I read something somewhere, and I don't know who said it, and I thought it was a good point, too. I mean, the guy on deck was hitting 350. It wasn't like it was the pitcher on deck who had hit, who doesn't hit. I mean, it was the four-hole hitter on deck. Now, let's talk baseball, right? You do walk Mendoza. I think before the game starts, you always have a couple guys on your radar from a lineup, like, we're not going to let this guy beat us, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like in football. If we can take one thing away, let's not let this guy beat us in the course of a game, whether it's the running back or some big-time receiver that you try to make sure we got double coverage on, that that you take him out of the game, right?
Right.
Mendoza was probably that guy. If you look at Florida State, he's probably the guy, like, okay, 16 home runs, best hitter on the team from all the scouting reports. Let's not let him beat us if we can. With that being said, also walking the guy sets up a force at every base. You know, if a ball's hit in the hole and you can't make the play at first, but you can get it to third base and set up a force, that's obviously a positive thing from a defensive standpoint. So, no, I totally get why people say, all right, why didn't they walk him? Not didn't they walk him? I just hope people were saying that before he got the hit. Because it's easy to say it after he gets the hit. Oh, he should have walked him. As long as people were understanding that, hey, I would walk this guy now. And again, hindsight's always 20/20. The guy on deck was hitting 350. He was a freshman. He was a good hitter as well. So, Fontenot got him the two strikes. You know, he just couldn't finish him off. If he finishes him off there, we don't have this conversation. But again, Jordy, that's what makes it great, and that's what makes the game great is all the decisions that go into a baseball game.
Well, my daughter looked at me like I was crazy. I said, they're going to walk this guy. And she goes, why would they walk that? I said, they're just going to walk him. Well, they didn't. And the guy's only 6'5". He just kind of scared me. That was my thought process into it. All right.
Well, and Jordy, I'll tell you this. In the first two games, now he was walked two or three times in that first game. He had kind of been quiet, right? He didn't really do a whole lot. I mean, you saw 16 homers. You just felt like he was due. And so I can see why people had the feeling of, let's put this guy on. Let's not even deal with him. And of course, it didn't happen.
That's just one game. The entire two-game series, base running really, really hurt. Really hurt LSU.
It really did. And so it's a tough thing, and I was explaining this to a friend of mine this morning. I said, look, and I'm going to try to explain this as in layman's terms as I can for people that maybe, you know, true baseball people understand it, but people
a fine line between being aggressive, which is good, but the timing of things, you got to temper it a little bit.
Well, so this is what it comes down to. It's taught, and look, LSU's not the only one that teaches this. Every good baseball program wants to be aggressive on the base pass. And there's a difference between, like, you have to know what you're looking for as you're running. Like, taking the extra base is a big thing, and that can be a dagger in another team's, you know, back when you do it correctly. Like, when a ball's hit from – when you hit a single, okay, and a runner's scoring from second base and you're the hitter and you're trying to get to second base and you see an outfielder come up and launch the ball, and as soon as you see that ball go, you know, on an angle that's going to – go over the cutoff man's head, you don't even stop. You just keep going, and you take the extra base. Uh-huh. A lot of times, though, you have to know the rules of baseball, and you have to understand and anticipate what you think is going to happen. But then, Jordy, you have to react to what actually happens, okay?
Yes.
So I think sometimes these young kids, in their minds, they get, this is what I've been coached to do. This is what I've been taught to do. And I've got to take the extra bag because this is what's going to happen. And then it doesn't happen, but in their mind, they still have it figured out that they're going to take instead of actually reacting to what happens.
Right.
And it sounds so simple, but that a lot of times that's what it is. You have to anticipate what's going to happen beforehand. The good ones do, right? Ball in the dirt from a pitcher. Mm-hmm. Let me anticipate that. And then once I see it, let me react to what happens.
Yeah.
Sometimes they let the reaction get ahead of, or the anticipation actually get ahead of what actually happened. And so it's tough because, as you said, you got to know, too, when to kind of shut it down a little bit. I mean, I thought Watson's was not a great play by Watson, obviously, but I thought that Giacomo even earlier, the few innings before, may have been just as bad, if not worse, because that had the potential to be a huge inning, and you're sitting right there at third base. I mean, at least Watson was trying to take the extra base. I mean, the Giacomo was just being overly aggressive, and that's just a freshman mistake. He'll learn from that. He'll get better. But that one just took the win and took the air all out of Alex Box. And if you were there, Jordy, you felt it as well in the stand.
I was there. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe – and I'm not – look, these are college kids, and I'm not pointing the finger at any of them.
Sure.
But, man, you got to catch the ball, man. You got to catch the ball. And behind the plate, you got to block that thing. If you block it, then that runner doesn't get to second base, and we may still be playing.
Sure, and think about it like this too. I mean, it's keep going, Jordy. I forgot what I was going to say. I had a good point, but I'm going to let you continue your show.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, you know, look, it's the little things that add up, and the team that makes the fewest mistakes is normally the team that ends up winning. And to me, LSU had some self-inflicted mistakes that cost them a trip to Omaha.
That's why you're good at what you do. You brought up what I wanted to talk about. See, the teams I thought going into this before the series even started, and I didn't, not that I thought, you can look at the numbers and it would tell you what I said, mm-hmm. was they were so evenly matched.
Yes.
They both went into the game hitting .274 as a team. They both went into the Super Regional. LSU had a 4.66 ERA as a team. Florida State had a 4.61 ERA as a team. I mean, you couldn't, I mean, two picture-perfect teams of what, you know, the similar seasons. They both struggled throughout the years, but then were playing hot late. I mean, you know, I thought they were two of the most evenly matched teams in the country. The difference was, you just said it, it was who made the least amount of mistakes that was going to come out on top. I did think they had two starting pitchers that you knew what you were going to get from them. Even Parrish on Saturday, their first guy, never let the game get out of hand. He gave up a run in the second, third, fourth, and fifth,
yes,
each of those innings, but he never allowed LSU to have the big inning, and he kept them in the game. LSU never, even though Cole Henry was throwing the ball well in the regional, we never felt like he was 100% healthy, although it looked it in the regional. We never seen him at his absolute highest level of play on a consistent basis. And then Marceau was good, but once again, it wasn't like he did it all year where we knew what we were going to get from him. You feel like with Florida State, the only clear advantage I thought they had was starting pitchers. Their first two guys, you knew what you were going to get from them. You knew they were getting the ball. And our two guys didn't really match them pitch for pitch. And again, Henry came out of the game wasn't feeling great, so that was a reason for that. But as far as the lineup, I still think I like our lineup better than their lineup. Now, they had a couple boppers that you'd like to maybe switch, but I liked 1-9.
Okay.
Our lineup, I thought, matched up well with them, and I thought our bullpen was just as good, if not maybe just even a hair better. But we just didn't, with the base running mistakes, the 10 walks on Saturday, we just couldn't match, you know, the fundamental play that they played with.
He's Buzzy Haydel. He was a former national champion for LSU Tigers. Did a great job in the radio booth this weekend. Man, I thank you for your time. We'll talk again soon and kind of paint the picture for next year. Should be a really good pitching staff if healthy, and we need to delve into that at another time. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Jordy.
All right, take care. Buzzy Haydel, kind enough to join us here on the Jordy Helpert Show. It's game 5 of the NBA Finals. Garrett Temple will join us to break down Raptors at home. Biggest game in franchise history. Next.
As a local business owner, you're busy. You don't have time to keep up with overly complicated accounting practices and tax regulations. You need Go Tax Resolution in Lafayette. Call us today at 337-420-1040. From the minute you walk into Go Tax Resolution, you feel like their only client. That's because their success is measured by your success. They'll provide you with the peace of mind you deserve. Get real help from real people. Call Go Tax Resolution in Lafayette today. Your go-to tax relief.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Hey, we welcome you back. Well, tonight's a very important day in the team history of the Toronto Raptors, the chance at the franchise's first title in its 24-year existence. For the Golden State Warriors, it's a last chance. Down 3-1 to Toronto, heading back to Canada after losing both games at home and the difficult circumstances that they face to extend its season in hopes of a third consecutive championship. So let's go to our NBA source. He is currently a shooting guard for the L.A. Clippers of LSU fame, our good friend Garrett Temple, kind enough to join us. Garrett, good afternoon, my friend. How are you, and where in the heck are you?
What's going on, Jordy? I'm great, man. Thanks for having me. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing terrific. What part of the world are you in?
I'm in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, at Po' Boy Lord, sitting down with my dad about to have a shrimp po' boy, man.
Man. See,
as far as I go, I'm still always going back to home. You know what it is.
Well, tell Pops hello for me, man. It's great to hear from you.
I will.
You have, first off, tell me, what is it like being a player and you invest so much, you work so hard, then all of a sudden You get a phone call or you get called into the general manager's office and he says, look, we made a trade for you. You're moving. So you're going from Washington, now you're heading to L.A. Just take me through that process real quick and how difficult that is.
Well, it's crazy. I got traded twice in the last 10 months.
Yes.
So I went from Memphis. I went from Sacramento to Memphis. And then I went from Memphis to L.A. Neither time was I brought into the general manager office. both times were over the phone. You know, technology nowadays, that's how it is. And it's that's just the way it is now. I mean, I had no ill will towards either front office. I was excited about going to Memphis, being on a team with J.D. Bickerstaff being the head coach.
Right.
I was excited about going to L.A. Memphis didn't work out in terms of how, you know, we didn't play as well as we expected. And they gave me an opportunity to go to L.A., play for a legendary coach in Doc Rivers and have a chance to make the playoffs, which we did, and made some noise in the first round. So, you know, any situation like that, because of my past in NBA and the way that I've had to grind into the league, I know the business side, so I never take it personally.
Yeah, that's awesome. And the Clippers seem to be heading in the right direction of things with a terrific owner, a terrific coach, and some cap space. I'm sure you're watching these finals with great interest because Kawhi Leonard's been great, and there's been all kinds of talk about him possibly heading out over to the Clippers. But you played against him. You've guarded him. He's guarded you, I'm sure. What is it about the Claw? I mean, he's just been amazing.
Man, he's an amazing player. He's the best two-way player in our game. Obviously, he was a great defender. He had the tools defensively. But he was a really good offensive player in college. People just didn't expect him to be able to shoot the ball the way he does. When somebody has hands like that, you know, that's actually one thing that deters you from shooting. You know, most people with big hands aren't great shooters, but Kawhi just worked. It was great that he got to San Antonio. It fit him in terms of his him being a low-key guy, just wanted to play basketball the whole time, stayed in the gym. I mean, he's a guy that really just blossomed into an amazing, you know, top three, top five player in his league, both offensively and defensively. And his ability to score as well as defend, and then obviously do it on the biggest stages. He's been there, he's been finals MVP. So this is just showing what type of player he was, what type of player he is when healthy. And, you know, whoever signs him next year, I mean, come this summer, they're going to have a guy that can really change the face of the conference.
No question. Garrett Temple kind enough to join us with the L.A. Clippers back in Baton Rouge during the offseason for a little while. So much talking about injuries, so much looms on the presence of Kevin Durant, who apparently struggled during a recent practice, but he could be available tonight. What hadn't played in a month. I mean, I know some guys can fall out of bed and shoot and score, and I'm sure Durant's one of those, but how much could you expect out of him in a situation such as what's going to happen tonight in a raucous environment and not having played very at all in a month?
It's going to be difficult. Like you said, a month is a little different than 3 or 4 days or a week. But not many people are Kevin Durant in terms of having that offensive repertoire that, you know, his biggest thing. I mean, obviously he can score. He's great in transition, but KD can score in the half court, just catch on the block, shoot over you. So those type of things won't require as much, wear and tear on his calf. But with that being said, he's obviously going to be limited if he does come back. And obviously he's not going to do anything to hurt, you know, his future career, but if he feels good enough to play, then it would be very interesting to see him come back and, you know, try to help his team win.
Yeah, Garrett Temple, kind enough to join us. If you guard a Durant, and you have, what do you try to do against a guy that's, 7 feet tall, long arms, so he actually plays like he's 8.5 feet tall, it seems like. What do you try to do to contain them. You can't stop them, but you can try to contain them, I guess.
The thing that you have to do to try to contain him is do your work early in terms of when he wants to post up. He likes to post up smaller guys. So when he does that, you want to try to push him out as far as you can. And when he does catch the ball, you want to, as much as you can, get underneath him. He doesn't like when people are physical and underneath him.
Okay.
But still, with all of that being said, he's a guy, like you said, 6'11", can just turn around and shoot right over the top of you. He doesn't like – he enjoys playing basketball the right way, but if need be, you know, he has no problem with just taking shots that he can make, you know, 50% of, 45% of, which is right over the top of a smaller guard. So it's a pick your poison, you know, whether you want him to be taking a big off the dribble one-on-one or posting up a smaller guy. And, you know, that's why he's one of the best scorers to ever play in the game, because he can score in so many ways.
He really can. What's it like being out in L.A. with the zoo that's taking place in the team, with the team that you share the Staples Center with? I mean, that's some bizarre stuff going on there.
Such a big city, Jordy. You don't really pay attention to all of the other stuff going on. We practice out on the west, you know, near the beach. So, and I was actually staying in the Marina Del Rey. So all of the stuff happening down like near Staples Center, I don't really see. But it is a situation where, you know, you go to the barbershop and people are talking about the Laker drama and talking about the Clippers. You know, they're not the little brother anymore, things of that sort. So that's always fun to hear. But L.A., like I said, is such a big city. So many different things are going on. You can actually go to a restaurant right by Staples Center and they won't know that a basketball is going, that a basketball game is going on the night before, or even whether it's a playoff game, you know, because L.A. is one of the biggest, most diverse cities in the world. So basketball sometimes doesn't register on those people's minds.
Of all the places that you've been to, all the places that you've lived for, however long it may be, what's been your favorite place?
Oh, my favorite city was Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
By far, in terms of just, you know, the people, the progressiveness, the ability to be in a small town atmosphere. When I was living in Arlington, Virginia, to have a 10-minute drive to the big city living, which is, I mean, in downtown D.C. And I spent 4 years there. I spent the most time there, which probably helped that. But, you know, the people I met were very genuine. I really enjoyed living in D.C. a lot. That was probably my favorite.
Always curious, when you get traded from Memphis to L.A., did the Clippers help you and say, look, we would recommend this is a good area for you to live in, or are you just on your own, do whatever you want to do? How does that work?
So when I got traded, the Clippers, yeah, they help you. They actually pay, they have to pay your living expenses for a certain amount of time, and they usually give you a rental car for a certain amount of time, and they definitely tell you this is the place where most guys like to live, or since you're only here for, you know, a couple of months, 3-4 months, since I'm a free agent this summer, there was no reason for me to go find a house or a permanent spot. So they just point me in the direction of a hotel, honestly, at first, and then if I want to do an apartment, they'll help cover the cost for a certain amount of money. So that's what happened this time.
So if you don't mind, and you can tell me, Jordy, no, I'd rather not. But all right, so you have your last game. You have your exit meeting with Doc Rivers. And how does that go? Hey, Doc, I love the direction this team's going in. I'd love to be here. How does that work?
Well, actually, Doc is interesting because he's really not a big fan of exit meetings the day after the game or days after a game. He's a guy that likes to let things go on for about a week or two, and then everybody settle down, and then he'll have people reach out. He may reach out, but, you know, he's a guy that doesn't do things, I guess, traditional way. Mm. So, you know, my agent is going to talk to all the teams, a lot of teams, and they've, you know, obviously talked to L.A. since I'm still a member there, and there's interest. And, you know, come July 1, we'll start, you know, talking to everybody else. And, well, should I say July happening June 31st or 30th at 6 p.m., which is that's when they moved it up to.
Right.
We'll start talking to teams and figure out what happens from there.
Out of curiosity, as a veteran of the league, what do you think of the moves that the New Orleans Pelicans have made since Dell Demps has been gone? Now David Griffin's in, the trainer, head trainer from the Phoenix Suns. Tell me your thoughts on the direction this program's going.
I'm a fan of what New Orleans has done in terms of changing things up. Obviously, they were at a point where they were eighth seed in the middle of not making the playoffs to make an eighth, maybe seventh seed.
Uh-huh.
Wanted to change it up. Happy for the city for getting the number one pick. Obviously, Phoenix has in the past had a great reputation through their training staff, so they got somebody from there. David Griffin, I have a relationship with him. He's great at what he does. So I'm really happy with what New Orleans has done. And it's great for the city. I'm really, you know, when they show the staff when they got the number one pick, how happy they were. You know, it just shows you how people really still believe in the Pelicans, and I really want to see them succeed.
That's awesome. I don't want that shrimp pull board to get cold. So last question, does this series come back to Oracle Arena, or does it end tonight?
It's tough, man. I honestly talked the other day, and I said I thought the Warriors would have won the series in 5 or 6 games. Speaking right now, I think Toronto closes it out tonight. They've been playing amazingly. This is going to be the toughest game for them to win, but I think with that home crowd that they have a chance, and I got Toronto winning.
Well, I've always said this, there's no place like home, man, and it's just not that far of a ride from where you are right now. I sure hope that Griff gives you a call and says, let's come play with Drew and Zion and some of the other guys. It would be great. I just want the best for you, my friend. That's all I want, and I greatly appreciate your time.
I appreciate it, Jordy. Always good talking, brother.
All right, buddy. You take care, man. Tell Pops hello. That's Garrett Temple of the L.A. Clippers, a free agent, and we'll see what happens at the end of this month. Somebody would be smart to hire and get him on the roster. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
Welcome back. 51 minutes after the hour. It wasn't a question of if, it was a question of when, and when is now. Mondo Duplantis, the pole vaulter extraordinaire, I think he lost his only meet at the NCAA Outdoors, came in second in the pole vault. He is he's going pro to prepare for the World Championships and the 2020 Olympic Games. Mondo has qualified to compete for Sweden in both events because of his mother. So congratulations to Mondo Duplantis. Told you to enjoy it while we can. It's only a question of when. And when is now. So thank you. One and done, Mondo. All right. This is unusual. We've had there have been football and baseball combination players. There have been football and track combination players. But I can't think of ever before having a football/basketball. Chris Carrier maybe did it for a little bit, but he came on when LSU had a bunch of injuries, a bunch of sick kids, and kind of came on and, you know, filled in a little bit. So Chris Carrier was one of them. Shout out, Chris. How you doing, buddy? But Jordan Toles from St. Francis Academy in Baltimore, Maryland, is going to play football and basketball. Ed Orgeron got Toles in for an official visit over the weekend, and Tolles, a four-star safety. He's 6'3", a buck 90. He is a top 10 safety, one of the top 150 prospects in high school football, according to 247 Sports. He becomes the 17th commitment in LSU's 2020 class. He's also being recruited by Will Wade. He's a shooting guard with some hops. In fact, I saw the kid at the baseball game. He's filled up, filled out. He looks really, really good. I'm his same height, but I'm 10 pounds heavier. So not bad. I felt good about that. So Jordan Tolles coming into the fray. LSU will not be going to the College World Series, but it's going to be heavily inundated with SEC teams. Vanderbilt punched their ticket. Mississippi State, maybe the hottest team out there, is in. Currently in the bottom of the seventh, Auburn is pummeling North Carolina in Chapel Hill, 14-3 with two outs in the bottom of the seventh. North Carolina, the home team, so they're down to seven more outs. But right now, Auburn looks like they're going to punch their ticket. And then the other one-game winner-take-all is Ole Miss versus Arkansas. So four SEC teams will be in the field of eight at Omaha. The other four, Michigan from the Big Ten, Texas Tech from the Big 12, Florida State from the ACC, and Louisville from the ACC. So a heavy-duty, it just means more, SEC College World Series in Omaha. So congratulations to them. Wish it could have been five. Would loved to have had LSU in there, but unfortunately not. Game five of the NBA Finals. Again, Kevin Durant says he is going to play. He's not on a minutes restriction. They're going to play it by ear and see. It's all hands on deck, right? You win, you survive and advance to play another game. You lose, season over. Meanwhile, David Griffin, the head of the Pelicans, has come out and he's listening and he's told everybody, this is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a combination of assets that include an all-star player, a young player with all-star potential, and two first-round picks. Now, those wants are on a sliding scale. For example, the better the all-star player, maybe the softer the requests on how high those draft picks are. But we'll see. You got to have a starting place in trade talks. You got to. But there remains the uncertainty of how many assets teams would be willing to move for Davis, who could leave as a free agent next July. But don't think that people aren't looking at what Kawhi Leonard has done for Toronto. It was a one-year deal. Toronto took a roll of the dice. They didn't, there were no guarantees, and there's still no guarantees he's going to sign a long-term deal. So we shall see. North Carolina just homered a two-run shot, so it's now 14-5, two outs, bottom of the seventh. Longtime San Antonio Spurs guard Tony Parker finally hanging up the kicks, retiring at the age of 37. So, Tony Parker, part of that great deal. And the Pelicans are adding Swin Cash to the front office. David Griffin talking about diversifying. Swin Cash was a heck of a basketball player back in the day, right? Was a WNBA champion. Cash will have the title of Vice President of Basketball Operations and Team Development. She will scout, help player development on and off the floor, and assume other roles within the organization. So there you have it. There you have hour number one. It's in the books. Coming up, Hot Topics. More LSU baseball with another World Series champion, Kevin Shipp, and Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. New members. We'll recap with Doug Ireland. All coming your way. Hour number two, the Jordy Helfrich Show, presented by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. We'll be right back.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle. tackle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go. It's Monday. It's June 10th, and the athletic season of LSU is officially over thanks to Florida State's 12th inning walk-off base hit to end LSU's baseball season 5-2-4. We are presented each and every day by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. For everything you need, DC's Little Capital Exxon has it for you. Good news, David Ortiz was ambushed by a man who got off of a motorcycle, shot him in the back at nearly point-blank range around 8:50 p.m. Local time Sunday at the Dial Bar and Lounge. A more revered person in the world, in the Dominican Republic, than Big Papi. Performed surgery there. They, for 6 hours, removed part of his intestines and colon as well as his gallbladder. Ortiz also suffered liver damage. The Boston Red Sox confirmed that the team was sending a plane to the Dominican Republic with the hope that Ortiz would be in Boston tonight. He's been cleared to fly to get more treatment. So we wish nothing but the best for Big Papi. With that in mind, for the rest of what's hot around the world of sports, we take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Good afternoon, my friend. How was your weekend?
My weekend was pretty decent, Jordy. You know, it definitely had a lot of things going on. Mind you, a little disappointed to see what happened on Sunday night with LSU, yeah, Florida State. But you know what? It couldn't have happened against a better team. I feel like when you look at Florida State, Mike Martin, it feels like this team is just... We talk about it a lot in sports, Jordy. The team of destiny, it just feels like this might be their year.
They are really good. They have some tremendous-looking athletes. They've got some pitchers that are really good. I like their team. I don't know how they lost as many games as they did, to be quite honest with you. But Mike Martin's got them peaking at the right time. Not a more gracious coach out there. Very complimentary about LSU, their fans. It was a well-played series. To your point, they were just the better team.
They really were the better team all the way around, Jordy. It was just impressive to see. And, you know, a lot of people are talking about this, so I might as well just kind of get it out of the way now on this Monday afternoon. Jordy, were you disappointed with the season because of the fact they did not make it to Omaha?
No, you know, they're the preseason number one team in the country by just about every service that's out there. We already talked about all the injuries. Look, it's not... They dodged their way through the minefields, and they got to a super regional, and they got to host it at home. You know, a little bit of a disappointment because you always want to end up in Omaha, but when on the grand scheme of things, not bad at all, man. Not bad at all. So, no, I'm not disappointed. These kids tried. They didn't make those mistakes on purpose. But, no, you know, and overall, we'll talk about this later on in the week. It's been a pretty darn good sports year at LSU.
It really has, Jordy, when you just look at how everything was. You know, you look at LSU football. They get into New Year's Six Bowl, for one, to beat the quote-unquote national champs in Central Florida. You get to the Sweet 16. Yeah. I have to agree with you, Jordy. All around, it was just a phenomenal year for LSU sports. But you can about imagine how much better it's going to be because you got a lot of youth coming back to LSU.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've got... obviously, one of the best recruiting classes coming into LSU on the football scene. Well, Wade back as the head coach.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it feels like a lot of things are going the way to where LSU can be good all the way around. That'd be a great thing for Baton Rouge.
Only one other school has had the success, football, basketball, baseball, and that's Michigan.
Yep.
So that's pretty rarefied air for LSU. So job well done. Scott Woodward is coming in with in a pretty darn good situation. You mentioned football's got a lot of players coming back. They got a lot of expectations. Will Wade's back, signed a 5-star recruit. He's got all those guys that tested the pearl waters. They're back. And Paul Menard is going to have a heck of a pitching staff if they can keep him healthy.
I think that's the key word there. I think that's the key word for a lot of sports. But, you know, you brought up Michigan, Jordy. My goodness, what a performance from Michigan, eliminating the number one seed, UCLA.
Love it.
Is just upsetting the apple cart and then some.
How about not only that, but what about the kid that pitched game two for Vanderbilt? Like 19 strikeouts,
no hitter.
That's unbelievable. 19 strikeouts. That's unbelievable.
That was one of the coolest things. And you had to be up in the wee hours of the night to kind of catch the end of that one because they had a lot of rain delay and whatnot.
Yeah.
But the dude was just an absolute stud.
That's unbelievable.
I can't wait to see what this guy is going to wind up doing because I don't have it in front of me right now, Jordy, about where he got drafted at when you look at him. So I can about imagine this guy got drafted pretty highly, and he's going to wind up doing some big things.
Yeah.
Kumar Rocker, 19 strikeouts.
Wow.
He was. Here's the scary part, Jordy. I was talking about the draft.
Yeah.
Kid's a freshman.
Oh, I know. That's absurd.
6'4", 255.
Yeah. That's the thing I noticed about Florida State. Paul Menard loves getting all these shortstops and, and putting them around all over the place. We got guys 5'7", 5'8", 5'9". Florida State, 6'5", 6'3". Yeah. Big specimens. Speaking of this, I know this is your, but I got to ask you this because you're my UFC guy.
Yeah.
You're my guy. Do you want to see this fight? Because the Biebs, Justin Bieber, has challenged Tom Cruise to a fight in the octagon. He said, Tom, if you don't take this fight, you're scared and you will never live it down. Now, Tom Cruise has saved the world many a time as Jack Reacher and as Ethan Hunt.
Yeah.
But he's almost 60 years old. Now, Biebs, he's a singer, choreographer, but he's younger. So who you got? The Biebs or Tom Cruise in the octagon?
Tom Cruise in a second round knockout, Jordy. Justin Bieber is a guy who I feel like Mike Tyson said it best. Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. I feel like the second Justin Bieber gets clocked upside the face, be it, he's probably got a soft jaw. So it's like, I think you wind up seeing Tom Cruise just land one, and that would be it.
One good smack?
It would just take one, Jordy, because he feels like he feels like a guy that would wind up probably, the second you hit him in the face, he's going down in a heap just because he doesn't seem like the tough guy.
Biebs is kind of ripped. Now, he takes his stuff pretty seriously, but Tom Cruise, even though he's older, he has been trained in fight. I mean, he saved the world many times on Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, come on. It'd be worth it.
It'd be
Dana
worth
White, put it on, baby. Put on the fight as a prelim to the next big one.
All right, Jordy. You know, might as well have a sidebar here for a minute. You're talking about Tom Cruise. Why not kind of put guys in their own kind of age grouping? Let's go with this, Jordy. Tom Cruise, Keanu Reeves. Who you got?
Ooh, I got Keanu Reeves.
I got to go Keanu as well.
That Matrix dude, he's something.
I mean, John Wick.
Yeah, you can't hit him. Yeah,
you can't.
Wick is nasty. Yeah, okay, I got that.
It is, and then, my goodness, Jordy, we've got a big one tonight on the hardwood. Golden State Warriors, Toronto Raptors, Kevin Durant says he'll be back. Do you think he winds up being a big impact, or could this be kind of him just there?
I'll put it to you this way. Toronto better win this one. Because if they don't, and it goes back to Oracle, and Kevin Durant starts getting his basketball legs back, look out. So, Raptors, it's the biggest game in your 24-year history.
Yep.
You better get this. I don't know what to expect. I know if I took a month off and came back in, it would be hard. But Kevin Durant seems to be the guy that he falls out of bed making jumpers. Just making them. It doesn't matter when, how. And as Garrett Temple said, he's 6'11", 7 foot. All you got to do is post up on the block, turn around and shoot over people. Well, who's going to stop that? So I think he makes an impact. We'll see. It's definitely watchable definitely watch it.
Oh, it's going to be amazing to see tonight, Jordy, obviously, with the Raptors. They're one win. You got to imagine how crazy Jurassic Park is going to get, possibly single-handedly causing the Warriors' hopes of hoisting the Larry O'Brien trophy to become extinct.
They've been lining up for 2 days to get in the rain, in the cold. God bless them. But again, they better win tonight or look out. Look out. But Kawhi Leonard's so good. Plus, the supporting cast is so good. It's been terrific. Good for them. We shall see. We shall see. CD, job well done. He's got Tom Cruise and Keanu Reeves. Okay. See you, Biebs. That's all the time we have for Hot Topics right now. Brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. Do yourself a flavor. Bring Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go. More local.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfer Show. On 103.7 The Game.
You know, welcome back, by the way. Very few individuals that participate in sports can play their last game and go out as a winner. And I know this current LSU baseball team is feeling the hurt and the pain of the way their season ended last night. Kevin Shipp was a great pitcher for LSU, and LSU walked off in 1996 in the most grandiose fashion with the Warren Morris home run. But I wanted to get Kevin on to talk about LSU, this pitching staff and everything, and it's always a pleasure. Kevin, how have you been, my friend?
Hey, Jordy, great, man. Thanks for having me on. Everything is well, just working hard and chasing kids every day and just living the dream, as they say, I guess.
How was it watching that game last night? Take me through your emotions of that thing.
It was a great day, man. To know about it, I mean, that's the type of games that you want to be in, to thrive in. A great experience for those kids. Unfortunately, the ending was not as what we all wanted and expected. However, I think they battled hard. Obviously, it's obvious that there were some mistakes made, and you know that's just kind of how these big games happen. You got to be better. Be prepared, not make any mistakes, and step up when you need to be, and some of those things did not happen.
Kevin Shipp, kind enough to join us. Yeah, LSU with some mistakes. The team that makes the fewest errors is a team that is a team that wins. Excuse me, but I've got to ask you as a pitcher. Of course, you struck out Pat Burrell in the College World Series. He was the big bopper for them. Your thoughts? So many people talking about Mendoza, first base is open. Devin Fontenot on the hill, and I'm going to ask you about Fontenot in just a minute, but. In that situation, were you surprised that they pitched to Mendoza with first base open or not?
Yes, I guess I am. Not knowing much about the kid and knowing his statistics and just kind of the fact definitely crossed my mind in the moment at the time, but even after the fact, I dug into some of the statistics and so forth and not judge anybody's opinion and decision on that call or what have you, but I think Mendoza would have been on first base with me taking my chances with the number four hole hitter. He only had four home runs. It was 8-5 for the night. I think the chances may have been with that scenario.
Gotcha. Fontenot, I mean, you've been in those situations before, a starter or a reliever. The job he did, I haven't seen anything better than that in a long time.
Yeah, what a phenomenal performance, the best that I've seen him pitch and best I've seen him in quite a few years as well. He pitched his heart out, very gritty kid. You got to tip your hat to him. It was a base hit, wasn't a bad pitch. And that's just, with those things there, you just got to kind of take it on the chin and learn from it, and hopefully it makes you a better player for the next season.
Of one thing, as we look ahead, LSU will lose some, you know, Watson and DePlantis and Smith and some others, Hess, but But they're going to have Henry back. They're going to have Marceau back. Hopefully they get Jaden Hill back. They're going to have Eric Walker back and Fontenot back. So pitching, and I use this word very, very carefully, if healthy, should be the strength of this ball club.
Yeah, I mean, it should be. It always is. They always have great arms. You know, Coach Dunn does a great job with them. You know, me being 20-some-odd years removed from the game, I don't keep up with it as much as I need to, but just I don't think pitching's changed a whole heck of a lot. You know, just when it comes to pitching, you got to be able to elevate your game each and every outing. And one thing that, you know, I learned from many good guys is just having paying attention to the details, the little things about your approach to the game, about your approach to the hitters, understanding, you know, who you're facing, it makes a big difference. And I don't know enough about the team and their approach in that fashion, but, they always have great arms. They got great kids to recruit, so they definitely should be have a stacked staff next year.
Kevin Shipp, kind enough to join us. I'm curious now. It's a long season, man. It's a grind. It's over 50 games, and there's a lot of pressure. And so, what does a pitcher do now? The season is over, and it seems like LSU's had so many arm troubles with their pitching staff. What do pitchers? What did you do when the season was over? How long did you wait before you picked up a ball? And what did you do when you first picked up a ball again?
Well, for me particularly, back then, you know, I would throw my four seasons in college and then a few years in the minor leagues. My number of innings in college were anywhere from 90 to probably 115 that I pitched in JUCO and at LSU. I took a break over the summer. I just went work and made some money. But I took a break and then got back at it in the fall season. So that was my experience. I don't know if there's a threshold of a number of innings with kids. If they don't pitch over a certain amount, do they go after the summer and pitch or not? But for me personally, that's what I did, was just continue to work out, stay in shape, not really throw that much, just give the arm a break, and then get ready for the fall season.
Is it an anomaly that they've had so many arm injuries, or do they need to reevaluate their approach and how they do things? Because, man, this whole season they've never had the same three starters on the mound, I don't think, all year long.
Yeah, I would say it's an anomaly. And like I said, Joey, I don't know enough about their training program and whatever they're doing there. I don't know enough about that to really even comment. Okay. But I would definitely say this year has definitely got to be an anomaly. And I don't know if this happens with other teams. I think LSU was pretty banged up considerably versus, you know, across the top teams in the nation this year. But, you know, it's an interesting statistic to know they had that many. And I guess it's something they definitely need to evaluate.
Kevin Shipp, one of the heroes of the 1996 LSU World Championship team, the day that Warren Morris hit the home run, the shot heard around the world that we will never, ever forget. That was such a fun time. Do you still get asked questions about that time and time again? Are you tired of hearing about it, or is it something that it never gets old?
No, you know, to be honest, it never gets old, and I still hear about it. Yeah, there's long, legendary LSU fans, no matter where you're at, if they see you and recognize you, they're going to bring it up. And, you know, it makes you feel good. It was a great moment. Me and literally, as we're speaking on the phone right now, obviously I'm looking at a group text with about 10 of my old players from that year that they're texting and going back and forth, obviously, about the game. So it just kind of shows you 23 years later, some of us guys are still, you know, texting what we have done, what happened, and so on and so forth. And you can imagine some other things as well.
Yeah, I can only imagine the second guessing and all that kind of fun stuff. Yeah, I had some guys on from the 89 team that when LSU was playing against A&M, and how I got involved in this group text, and it was like 20 guys, and it never stopped. It kept going and going and going. And so that's the fun part of it, right? It's that you guys are brothers for the rest of your lives, man. That's special.
Yeah,
That is that is very true, and it's very special.
What is Kevin Shipp doing these days, if you don't mind sharing with our listeners? You got a family, and you're working hard, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, ironically, I have three daughters, working hard, trying to raise them. And I'm in, I've been in sales, doing some sales consulting for a couple different companies out there, and just grinding it out and raising them girls. No softball players, just soccer and cheerleading.
Oh my gosh, yeah, no baseball. I'm with you, but the discipline that you had as an athlete at the highest level, I'm sure is a discipline that you have taken into the everyday world and the business world, the sales world, and those memories, those it's like muscle memory, right? You just do it.
It is. You know, I tell for all those young kids out there and guys that are even in college right now, and obviously, in my personal opinion is that I learned from one of the best in Skip, and yep. And even outside of that, ironically, one of my junior college coaches, who I stayed very close in touch with, is Scott Berry, who was the head coach of Southern Miss.
Yes.
And he coached me in junior college, and his predecessor, wow, Corky Palmer, did as well. So I have a lot of respect for those guys. They are phenomenal coaches, and they know the game. You know, for Scott to be as successful as he is, recruiting against Bio and at Ole Miss and recruiting against State.
And
Starkville, and then even recruiting over here, for him to get those the kids that he gets and coaches them up, like, he's an unbelievable coach to be able to, you know, to come in Dallas Bucks and compete against them in the regional. So I learned from some really great guys, and definitely have a lot of great life lessons that I am able to implement in career, parenting, et cetera.
Well, a national champion you are, a national champion you always will be. Always fun talking with you, man. All the best to your family. Cheer them up, soccer them up, and keep getting those sales, man. Always fun. So thank you for your time, man.
Yep, thank you, Jordan. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right, buddy, you take care. Kevin Shipp. Yeah, it's you talk to different people, and it's, you know, you take a chance. You take a chance if – I still say it. If you don't let the ball get past you and the runner's at first, it's a whole different scenario. But unfortunately, it gets past the catcher, runner advances to second, you don't put him on, you pitch to him, and the rest is history. Ugh, the rest is history. While that was going on over the weekend, we had a new class of Hall of Famers go into the hall in Natchitoches. Doug Ireland will join us next to give the highlights of that here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 1037 The Game.
Welcome back. The Jordy Helpert Show brought to you by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia Exit in Bro Bridge. Make it your go-to stop. I've made it mine, DC's Little Capital Exxon. While LSU baseball at the box was taking front row center stage down in Baton Rouge, a little further up and over in Natchitoches, Louisiana, it was another induction class into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, 11 new members, and a gentleman that plays such an integral part in it. He is the king of Natchitoches, long time sports information director at Northwestern State, recently retired, but still working and working hard. My good friend Doug Ireland, kind enough to join us. Doug, what a successful weekend it was, my friend. How are you?
I'm wonderful, a little weary, but wonderful in the afterglow, Jordy. Thank you very much. I would just wish we were looking forward to a visit to Omaha.
Oh, I'm telling you. But what a diverse group. You had coaches, you had broadcasters, volleyball players, football players, tennis referees, and even a rodeo cowboy. What a diverse group.
It was a fantastic Louisiana gumbo. And, you know, first volleyball player in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, and we'll never do better than Danielle Scott with 5 Olympic Games. My Lord, World's Player of the Year in 2001. From Baton Rouge, Woodlawn
yep.
High School.
Yeah.
And then T-Berry Porter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's how big a deal he was. If you bought Wrangler jeans in the mid-50s, his picture was on the back pocket.
No way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rode his horse. I mean, he won his first world championship in Madison Square Garden in 1949. Rode his horse down Broadway.
Sweet. With his Wrangler jeans on. Sweet.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the great quarterbacks at Louisiana Tech. Everybody thinks of Terry Bradshaw, but what a character Matt Dunnigan is.
Matt, and you hit the nail on the head, Jordy. You and he on this show, you'd have to get another band on the radio because one would not be enough. I mean, the wavelength, we'd need double strength. Matty is the Terry Bradshaw of Canadian League television coverage now.
Okay, yeah.
After being in six of their Super Bowls, the Grey Cup, and oh, by the way, the CFL Hall of Fame loves him so much that they brought the Grey Cup to Natchitoches for the entire weekend.
No way.
Yeah.
That's
we
amazing.
Had the Grey Cup at all of our events, and it is royally commissioned, and it is treated in that style.
Doug Ireland, kind enough to join us, plays such an integral part in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. And it's, again, if you have not been out there, if you're a sports fan, and you've got to be to listen to this show, it's a must trip take to go see this beautiful building with so many great heroes from our great state. None bigger and more deserving than Max Fugler, the former LSU. He played center. He played linebacker. Well-deserved recognition for a guy that played such a key role in that first national championship Paul Dietzel-led team.
Well, you think of the names on that team and the great iconic LSU figures of, you know, Jimmy Taylor and Billy Cannon and Johnny Robinson. They didn't play as many minutes as Max Fugler did.
Yeah.
And they all love each other and loved each other. Dot and Cannon, Billy's wife, mm-hmm. and his daughter Bunny were there Saturday night, and so were, I think it was five, it might have been six other 1958 players. Warren Rabb was there. Mr. Johnny Robinson was there.
Mm-hmm.
And as Max put it best, he says, "We were more than a team. We were family."
Well
and
said.
They truly have carried that bond throughout the years.
Doug Ireland, kind enough to join us. Yet Charles Smith going to be the all-time winningest high school basketball coach in the state. Doesn't look any young. I mean, I don't know how long he's been coaching, but he certainly doesn't look that old.
He's a genetic freak. And,
yes.
Oh, by the way, while he's won over 1,000 basketball games at Peabody, and that's just 33 years, he's also taught for 48 years. Your two favorite subjects, Jordy, calculus and trigonometry.
Yes. Ace them both. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so you guys could have a good conversation.
Yeah, that would be great on the radio. But, of course, look, and I'm not slighting anyone, Roger Cador, for taking a nothing and building it up and all the things he did and all the young men that he's had an influence on in the game of baseball.
And not
well
a vocalist.
Deserved.
We found that out Saturday. We had Holly Conway, Miss Louisiana, daughter of Hall of Famer, Hollis Conway.
Uh-huh.
She got up after singing the national anthem, and after Roger spoke, we had him stay around, and Holly and Roger led the crowd of 820 in a rousing rendition of Take Me Out to the Ball Game, but halfway through they cut Roger's mic because it just wasn't quite up to snuff.
Headliners, of course. We got to start with Peyton Manning. I recorded and I played it back. It's not a – I mean, look – such a good guy, so talented, but such a good guy.
The kind of guy you'd hope was, his kid was in your kid's class because he's the best neighbor and human that you would want to be around in that way. He's so unassuming. He's so modest. He's so self-depreciating. And what I found so impressive, not a surprise. You know, he's noted for his preparation during his playing career.
Mm-hmm.
He knew as much about the 2019 inductees and past members as anybody.
Yes. Yes.
And he was very eager not only to meet and develop relationships with the class of 2019, but he insisted any time there was an older Hall of Famer who had been inducted in previous years, he wanted to meet him, and he had a blast backstage before we started the show, meeting everybody that he hadn't already met who was in the Hall of Fame. And, of course, thrilled to go in where his dad was.
His dad. Yeah, I was going to say, his dad, Archie, the Saint legend, the Ole Miss Rebel, was there as well. It looked terrific. Are there any other father-son combos in the Hall of Fame?
Yes, and both have Baton Rouge ties. Of course, and this was something that Archie set up.
Yep.
Okay, so go ahead.
The Joneses, yes.
Yep, Mr. Dubb, who was there, 92 years old, and rode down from Ruston with the Ruston rifle, his son, Burt Jones. And they were delighted, and they sat with the Mannings, and we posed a picture with the three father-son combinations. The third, unfortunately, the father, the great Slats Harden, the 36 Olympic gold medalist in the Berlin Olympics, LSU great. He's passed on, but his son, Billy Harden, 1964 Olympian and inductee in the Hall of Fame about 20 years ago, Billy was there with his wife, Diane. And so Peyton and Archie were thrilled to meet Billy, and so were Dub and Bert. Uh-huh. And we posed a picture with those family ties, the three Hardens, Jones, and Mannings. Of course, there's another Manning on the horizon, too.
Yeah, that's right. Doug Ireland, longtime sports information director at Northwestern State. Just before Peyton got on, the Mad Hatter came on, and did he look like he had fun. His whole family was there. It was a great celebration for one Les Miles.
And you talk about somebody that embraced this. Not only, as you know, there was a little party in Baton Rouge the night before.
Yes.
And they only had 800 or so people there.
Yeah.
I mean, this was really the Miles family viewed this as their chance to thank Louisiana and thank their dear friends and celebrate together. And that certainly continued when they got to Natchitoches. And, you know, people have asked me about my impressions. And one of the strongest I'll come away with from this weekend was how beautifully close the Miles family is.
Yes.
Every family is close, but boy, this was special. The adoration those kids have for their father and the love between Kathy and Les and just the sense of humor and the self-depreciation. And just, it was, you know, it was kind of like watching Mayberry RFD.
Doug, take me through the process. There were 11 inductees. I'm sure there were a whole bunch of people that were brought. How big is the board? Who makes the decisions? And how does it all work?
It's a train wreck, no. You know, the Louisiana Sports Writers Association created the Hall of Fame back in 1958. That's one of the two reasons the LSWA was founded, was that, and to promote high school sports coverage around the state. And there's been a selection committee that now is 35 strong of working media members from around the state. It's kind of like the state legislature. You know, we don't have one area that's got too many or not enough. We try to balance it out. And they consider annually a ballot that had, this year, for example, 145 competitive sports candidates.
Wow.
Those are coaches or players who, you know, have in 27 different sports categories, sailing, wrestling, boxing, horse racing, bodybuilding. We have an 8-time Mr. Universe who's on our ballot, who was a Grambling football player. And you can only pick 8, and no more than 3 from any one sport. So we could have the Louisiana Football Hall of Fame. It'd be astounding.
Yes.
We could have Louisiana Basketball Hall of Fame. It'd be amazing.
Yeah.
But as you just noted, we've got rodeo cowboy, volleyball player, football coach, baseball coach, high school basketball coach. It's a very diverse collection of sports stars. And every year we elect 8 of them from that ballot. And we could easily pick 50 to put in, and they'd be well-deserving.
That's amazing. Doug Ireland, kind enough to join us. When does the process for the class of 2020 begin?
It's already underway.
All right.
We are meeting in mid-August to pick the class of 2020. And the reason we do that is so, for example, particularly with people like Miles and Manning, who have incredibly congested schedules.
Yes.
The earlier you can get on their calendar, the better off you are. And then there's the run-up. You know, during the fall, we have what we call celebrating our legends. And when we can coordinate with the new inductees will do a recognition at a football game, say at Tiger Stadium. We've done those before, and at say Peabody High School or wherever it may be that they have a tie in their hometowns, to just celebrate them with their alma maters or with their hometowns. With T. Barry Porter, we took him to the Angola Rodeo.
Sweet.
Yeah, and then we do that through the year to build the excitement, but also it's a massive process to host this three-day celebration. The Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame Foundation does that under the leadership of CEO Jumbo, Ronnie Rance.
Yeah.
And Ronnie and our staff, very small staff, but very hardworking, and a ton of volunteers and good people, spend months getting ready for this, and it's such a joy to see it unfold.
Awesome. Yeah.
We feel like we're hosting 11 family reunions every year.
Yeah, well, you, as they always say, you've come a long way, baby, and it's really, really, really well done. Now, let's talk about Doug Ireland real quick before I let you go.
One quick note.
Yes.
Your coach at LSU, Dale Brown, who went in the Hall of Fame in 99, he emailed me late Saturday night. I know it's shocking that he was up late Saturday night, but he had watched the show live on Cox Sports Television. And he said, Doug, he says, that's the best yet. He says,
yes. Very well done.
Being in the Hall of Fame with these people.
Yeah, very, very well done. What is Doug Ireland doing now with all this free time, or is there such a thing? Is there?
You know, I've been telling people this retirement thing. I was planning on starting my seven-day weekends today. However, the aftermath of the Hall of Fame, I'm going to be busy most of this week, and then things will taper off, and the seven-day weekends will begin. And then we'll kind of start looking around out of the corner of our eye and keeping our ears open, because I can't just count clouds. I'm certainly going to remain very active with the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
And, maybe somebody will hire me to work at their strawberry stand or something. I'm not sure.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know what to do when I go to a ball game, basketball game over there. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do without you.
Well, there's very good people who can do what I've done, and maybe I'll come and be the guy that fetches your bottles of water and meat pies.
Meat pies. I love it. Doug, congratulations, and please spread the word to everyone on the staff. As Dale Brown said, it was truly the best one yet, and I think it's just going to get better and better, and good luck picking eight. That's a tough task, and I'm sure there's a lot of dissertation back and forth, pros and cons that take place. That would be good to film. That would be fun.
It's a 3-hour R-rated discussion argument that is always colorful, and we come out of it knowing we've elected eight great ones, and we've left several dozen more on the side and need to get in.
Need to get in maybe the next year. Doug, thank you, man. Congratulations, and enjoy your seven-day weekends. I hope you get them.
I'm going to work at it, brother. I am. I appreciate it, Jordy. Always a joy to talk to you.
You're the best. Thank you, my friend. Doug
thank
Ireland,
you.
Job well done. Charles Smith, Danielle Scott, Dave Nitz, the longtime play-by-play voice at Louisiana Tech, Les Miles, tennis official Marie Gagnard, Matt Dunnigan, Max Fugler, Peyton Manning, Philip Timothy with the Sport Distinguished Service Award in Sports Journalism, Roger Cater, Southern University Baseball, and T. Barry Porter, Wrangler Jean, Sports Rodeo, your class of 2019. We're back to wrap things up here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Boys, girls, ladies, gentlemen, the sports season at LSU is over. Over and done with. But that's okay. Football season is believe it or not, it's not that darn far away. It's just not. So, anyway, we talked a lot about LSU baseball, and, you get to a super regional, you get to host one, it can't be that bad of a year, but it still pains when you lose in extra innings and a season that began with such high expectations that came to an end in a gut-wrenching 5-4 loss. You know, that's just it. It's the way it goes sometimes. But a lot of other teams would have loved to have been in that situation, to be playing that late in the season. And so anyway, life goes on, right? Life goes on. Pelicans, David Griffin, reports coming out that he is seeking a trade, including multi-team scenarios. I like this guy. I like him a lot. He's trying to get the most bang for the buck that he can. And, man, I'm excited about that. So, I mean, the 20th is not that far away, guys and gals. It's just not. And he wants to get a deal done before the trade so he can look at these draft picks and see. Reports are out. Again, Kevin Durant expected to play in Game 5 tonight. We'll see how effective he is and how it works. Let's go to this day in sports history, a bizarre one. June 10th, the year 1974, Mike Schmidt of the Philadelphia Phillies had one of the more bizarre base hits in baseball history. As Schmidt hit a ball off the public address speaker on the Astrodome roof and got a base hit out of it. One of the more bizarre situations ever in baseball history. The longest single in Major League Baseball on this day, June 10th, the year was 1974. Just imagine that. Hitting off the speaker and all you do is get a base hit. Thought he was out, whatever. But Mike Schmidt, interesting to say the very least. All right, birthday wishes. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Let's see who you share a day with. How about supermodel extraordinaire, 27-year-old Kate Upton celebrating a birthday today? Prince Philip is 98 years young today and still looks absolutely terrific. Prince Philip. Elizabeth Hurley, the actress, is 54 years old today. Let's see. Anybody else of significance? No, that's it. On the LSU front, celebrating a birthday today. Let's see. George Rice's celebrated birthday, and one of the all-time greats, the Buffalo Bills, longtime defensive tackle, part of the LSU National Championship team, Kyle Williams, celebrating a birthday today. So happy birthday to Kyle. Not a better guy out there. What a talent. What a player. Hearts and guts and soul. He did it all. If it's your anniversary today, well, happy anniversary. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. What a fun show. We appreciate Buzzy Heidel coming on and his candor as he was in the booth calling the LSU Florida State series. Garrett Temple, he's had to guard Kawhi Leonard. He's had to guard Kevin Durant, and they guarded him. So he gave some interesting up close and personal perspective of this thing. He thinks Toronto wraps it up tonight. So we'll see about Kevin Durant, how effective he can be. Kevin Shipp, former LSU pitcher, getting his perspective on pitching as a whole and this LSU baseball pitching staff as a whole. And then Doug Ireland sharing his thoughts on a very successful Hall of Fame induction ceremony in Natchitoches over the weekend. 11 new members joined in. So there you have it. CD, job well done as always, my friend. Thanks to all of you for listening in. Thanks to our partners that make it possible. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be wrapping up the NBA Finals, or we'll be heading back to Oracle Arena for a Game 6. We'll recap Game 5 and much, much more. We have only one Monday, June 10th. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until next time, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.
Live from the 237 Roof Studio.